Welcome to the New Books Network.
The Golden Thread, Where to Find Purpose in the Stages of Your Life, by Holly Woods, PhD. Purpose serves as your GPS, guiding your life trajectory, whether you listen or not. It can help you reach for the seemingly unattainable and stop compromising who you are or were meant to be. This book demonstrates through hard data alongside expert and client stories that knowing and living your purpose will positively affect every facet of your life. You'll also learn how your purpose shows up uniquely at different stages of life and is related to your childhood wounding, both of which are reasons you can't see your purpose so clearly. This book helps you make sense of your life and will answer the following questions. What is purpose and why do I need to know it? How do I find my purpose? How does the GPS of my purpose pull me forward? And how does purpose show up differently over my lifespan? In The Golden Thread, readers learn that their own nuanced, one-of-a-kind purpose is right there in front of them, waiting to be discovered. Listen to its whispers and let it guide you to a more fulfilling and impactful life. Author Holly Woods is a visionary who sees deeply into others' souls. She activates and catalyzes what wants to come alive in people and guides them to manifest their dreams through practical strategies. Holly has over 30 years of consulting and coaching experience in human and organizational development. She has over 2 decades of experience building and scaling business and products to help entrepreneurs, visionaries, and innovators create impact. In addition, she helps clients uncover their nuanced purpose, gain capacities and mindset to attain goals, and align decisions, products, and systems around what matters most. Holly earned a PhD in human and organizational development and is certified as an integral master coach, purpose guide, professional mediator and facilitator, and master energy practitioner. She is also a stages of consciousness developmental practitioner. For more information, please visit emergenceinstitute.net. That's emergenceinstitute.net. Hello, everyone. This is Elizabeth Cronin, a host for the New Books Network. And today I am pleased to welcome Holly Woods, author of The Golden Thread, Where to Find Purpose in the Stages of Your Life. So thanks for being here today. Very excited to talk to you about your book and thought we could get started by you sharing a little bit about how you became so interested in purpose.
Thank you, Elizabeth. I'm so happy to be here and talking about my very favorite thing in the world. You know, for me, it wasn't an interest. It was a life that I was deemed to live, and I did not know that until much later. Early in my childhood, I heard voices pretty early. I was what you'd call, I had the clairs. I didn't know it at the time, but I had access to lots of things that a lot of people don't have early on. And I was told that I was here to do something important. I remember a very specific instance, 5 or 6. And I was on vacation with my family, and we were driving around this little town, and all of a sudden I hear these voices and I'm like, who are you? And what do you mean? I'm here to do something important. And if so, then what is it? And so I was birthed into this question, literally. It didn't consume me. I didn't know what it meant. And I didn't spend a lot of time thinking about it as a child, but it just from very early, it was evident that I was meant to answer this question. You know, what am I here to do? Why am I a human on this planet at this time? And I had a pretty difficult childhood, despite taking some fun vacations periodically, a lot of abuse and neglect, and a lot to overcome moving forward in life. So pretty early, I'd say as an adolescent, mid-adolescence, I began to experience a lot of depression and suicidal ideation. And also, I've always been very inspired and motivated to, be and do myself. And so there was this very interesting tension between, who am I and what am I here to do? And I don't want to be here. Life's too hard. And so at a very early age, I set out to begin healing from the trauma of my childhood. And so late adolescence, I started in therapy, which was, almost all of what was available back then. And I see the look on your face, and I want you to assure you this turns out well. And that's part of why I was thrust into these scenarios, I think, is to figure all this out. But so I began at a very early age to, be deeply introspective to uncover what was preventing me from being happy and joyful and, living a full life. And over time, so this went on for decades. Over time, I began to really understand that this pattern of having to find myself and recover from trauma at the same time was this pattern that I was thrust into. This was sort of the gold of my lifetime. And it wasn't really until late 30s, early 40s when I was, I've always been a coach, and it was around that time that I began to start seeing this pattern in my life of having, ups and downs, and that always the downs would lead me to another revelation and another release of something, a liberation, which would cause me then to have, a greater up, if you want to talk about a thread. And so I started seeing this thread long before I knew what it was. I also raised four children, two mine and two stepkids. And I watched them grow. I was very deliberate about being a parent and watching them grow up and giving them what they needed. And I got to do that with my own daughters at a, from birth. So I set about helping them find out who they were and what mattered to them, and engaging them in things that they were inspired by. And they were very responsive to that invitation to engage in their life, and they were very clear about, yeah, this is something I love, and no, I don't want to do that anymore. And my stepsons hadn't had the same opportunity. And so it was fascinating to me to watch these two sets of two siblings over time, and how they responded to life and how they engaged with life, and how their own curiosities led them to the next thing that they would be engaged with, and ultimately, either choose to continue or decide not to. And it's so having that experience, and quite honestly, my daughters became very determined and committed and perseverant and oriented to the things that were most important to them. Not so with my stepsons, had very different lives. And so it was around this time, and I was having these reflections about my kids, and I was, kind of consumed with uncovering what was going on with me and what was causing me to heal and to move forward, and what inspired me, and how was I finding my way. And then I was also working with clients. And literally one day with a client, as I'm gathering her life story, which is always my first session with somebody, I want to know the whole thing, like from beginning to end, current. And I saw a golden thread in her. Like I said, I have a lot of psychic power, and I see things that most people can't see. And I literally saw a golden thread. And I was like, oh my God, what is this? And it began, it crystallized for me that we are living lives of our lives are oriented according to our soul's deepest desires. Our soul brings us here to accomplish things, to be the kind of, being that is ours to be in this lifetime. And it's always pulling and pushing and nudging and cajoling us to have different experiences. And those experiences can look like, wow, I have an opening and I love this and I'm excited and I'm enthused and let's move in that direction. Or it can look like, oh, I need to have this experience in order to learn something about myself, in order to free myself of that, to integrate the lessons and move forward, be liberated so I can be more of myself. And so this, if you were looking at me, you'd see my hand going up and down like a wave. It's like a golden thread that moves through our lives. And that literally is our soul pulling us forward, having the right kinds of experiences that allow us to be more and more and more of ourselves. So when I talk about purpose, generally I say, this is our soul's deepest expression, our facets of our purpose. That causes us to have many, many, many expressions in life. So there's not one purpose. I don't have a job or task or business, et cetera. That's not purpose. It's what lives in me, and it has many, many expressions, some of which look like a gift and some of which look like shadow. That was a very long answer to
No,
your
but
simple question.
it's helpful, and I think maybe a good follow-up question would be, can you maybe give us an example what you saw in either of your daughters in terms of like what it looked like? Because it sounds to me like parenting plays a big role in fostering connection to the purpose.
Yeah, absolutely. And for most of us adults, we don't have the opportunity really to go back retrospectively and completely gain all the information. But when I do work with clients, I literally do walk them through, since birth. I want to know the story so I can at least get some sense of what you've been trying to accomplish. I could tell you about both my daughters. But I'll choose one. My youngest daughter was always very social. We called her the butterfly in child. She made friends easily. She was always connecting with people. She had, it's almost like she was born with a great level of empathy for others. She's an Enneagram 2, for anybody who would know what an Enneagram is. She's very relational. And so I was always amazed, like Laurel is just, she's just so happy and flitty and just connects with people. And her tendency would be to make, and despite that, her tendency would be to make friends with people who had traumatic lives, who really had a level of suffering. I think because her empathy was so great, she was always bringing home friends who needed another parent, who needed a support system and needed a safe harbor. And like my house is always open to any of your friends, so sure, bring them. And literally, her entire life has been filled with these kinds of connections. And in that process, she was learning more and more about herself, and the ways that was useful and the ways it wasn't. And she would learn about how to support these people and how to become a better friend, a better support system. She'd learn about resources she could refer them to. And of course, I was helping her in this, but it was such a fascinating experience watching her and very social, very vivacious, very vibrant, really connected to lots of the world. She created these huge, massive networks of friends and resources, and just that it's always been her thing. And she went away to university, went to Berkeley, studied sociology and climate science. And during the pandemic, she was finishing up at college, and she got really, both of my daughters were radical activists, very involved in social things. What am I trying to say?
Movements,
Anyway, very
yeah.
active movements. Thank you. And she got involved in trying to save the People's Park in Berkeley, because it was on campus and it was a beautiful park in the middle of town, and whole communities used the park. And as she did so, she got really interested and engaged with the homeless population there. And I'm like, okay, Laura, well, are you actually working on saving the park or the people? And she's like, I don't know what I'm doing. But like, she couldn't help herself. She just got really involved in the homeless who would be displaced if the university bought People's Park, which was their plan. They would, build build whatever they were going to build, and all the people who lived there would be displaced, and all the people who used the park would be no longer available to use it. And what happened as a result of that is she became very, very invested in working with the homeless, the houseless, I guess is the appropriate term. And ultimately, she decided, I love the environment. I want to help save the planet, but the people are way more important. And so she applied for a job and got a position as a case manager for a nonprofit doing homeless case management in the San Francisco area. And she is now totally invested in that, and it fulfills her. She's incredibly powerful, good at it, like amazing amount of internal intrinsic resources and motivation. And it just, if you follow that story, it makes total sense given the kinds of things that her soul was pushing her to do from very, very early. And so that is an example of when someone is allowed to live according to what fulfills them, what motivates them, what obsesses them. If I had shut her down and said, "Oh no, don't bring those friends home," or "Can't you make a different set of friends that are more involved in, la la," and had not seen that this was really important to her, she wouldn't have been able to fulfill that so easily. And she would have developed some trauma around not being able to express herself. So a lot of the work I do is literally also helping people uncover the trauma that is imposed upon us as humans in our social and family contexts for not being ourselves. Most of us grow up in childhoods that, parents or peers or others have some sense of who we're supposed to be. And they're like, "Oh no, you shouldn't do that because we do this way." And we all have these stories which create deep, deep entrenched belief systems that we don't even have access to. And they create constrictions in our bodies because our bodies are so shut down. Anyway, I got to watch, and I can't say I wasn't a perfect parent, but I got to watch both my daughters really truly learn who they were and live into that version of them, because I didn't have an expectation about who they were going to be. And so they just naturally, organically became themselves, with some encouragement and prodding and, allowance, really.
Right. So had she had parents, or at least a mom, and you, who kept pushing her into, say, sports or something, and wanting to do that, that then would be an example of, in the book, I think you talk about she would be splitting off a part of herself, or.
Yes, yeah, and I it's the technical term is a fracturing subpsychic part. There's years and years, decades of research about how our psyche literally does split when some part of it is not allowed in our lives, and that part then becomes repressed and also shows up as a trigger in our lives. Some part of us, our personality is affected, and we're shut down in some way, and that's what we would call shadow. Shadow is really that which we're unconscious to. This daughter actually did play sports. She did a lot of things. It's like she had an enthusiasm for something, like, within the budget, let's go do that. And I would help her discern, are you still enjoying it? Does that still matter to you? Do you still want to spend the time? Et cetera. So I was always looking for her advocacy for something that, she was excited about. And if she wasn't excited about it, it's like, okay, fine, we did that, tried it. Guess it doesn't really, fit. I will acknowledge she wanted to learn to play violin early. And honestly, I couldn't imagine tolerating a violin in my home, like, a child playing violin, and having four kids, it was
I had a child
chaotic
with a
enough.
violin, so I know what you're
Yeah,
talking about.
and I literally shut that one down, and I regret it because she still talks about wishing she'd learned to play the violin, and it would have been a great opportunity for her to develop those capacities. So, like, I wasn't perfect. I wish that we had gone that path, but we didn't. So anyway,
Right. So for someone
yeah.
who maybe there, if somebody feels like unsure, because this whole idea that maybe your golden thread isn't within sight for you, or you had some sort of childhood. And I think, so let me go off on another tangent. I think parents often feel like we're the one with life experience. We know more than you, and we're your parents, so we should be guiding you and directing you. Whereas what you're suggesting, and in the book, I think you call it like your internal GPS, your purpose GPS, the children don't need to be guided and directed maybe as much as what we've thought.
Yeah, I agree with that. That is basically the premise, that we organically, as sovereign beings, have an orientation to what matters to us at a very early age. Most of my clients, if I get enough detail for them from them, I literally can pinpoint their an expression of their purpose, in toddlerhood. I had a client once who grew up in a farm family, and I think I describe her case study in the book, but she grew up in a farm family, and but she was her parents denied her the opportunity to become a farmer, because she was a girl, and she wasn't a boy, so you can't be a farmer, so you have to go do this and that. And she did end up having, a couple of careers, flowers, and it's a small produce stand and whatever. But when she came to me, she had spent the bulk of her professional life, her adult life, in a university infrastructure doing management. She'd gotten the degrees, she had the experience, and she went and did that. And then she retired. I was like, I still want to get my hands dirty. And when I heard her story, like, she was a child. Every day she went straight to the dirt and sat in the dirt and dug and played and tried to plant things. And like, it was, like, she had a very early awareness of what she wanted to do. I mean, not all children who play in dirt and want to plant things need to become farmers, but it was an obsession for her. And ultimately, as we worked together, she began to realize she had continued in the background as a hobby, a vocation, began exploring regenerative agriculture and, the gut biome. And she'd really been studying how important it was to create systems of agriculture and food production that were actually healthy for us and didn't destroy the planet. And so very quickly, toward the end of our working together, she actually began working. She found a position with one of the world's most renowned regenerative agriculture scientists. Amazing, right? And so we're looking for those early curiosities, those obsessions, those repetitive patterns of behavior, the things that, like my daughter, who kept bringing home kids that needed support and nurturing, really. And yeah, we can do this. I love being a mother. I don't mind if you bring home a dozen children. And and that would be hard for somebody who wasn't like me, who didn't like kids, but just an opportunity for her to express her deepest desire by supporting others. Now, there were times when she'd bring home a kid who was really, really deeply and had a very problematic set of behaviors that I had to work with and modify and create some parameters and safety and boundaries and things like that. So, because I didn't want my daughter to end up in a circumstance that wasn't healthy for her. And she fought me a little bit on that. And like, that's okay. I'm the parent here. I do need to guide you to some extent. So it's not like you throw off all the reins and let them go hog wild in any direction. Of course you step in as a parent, but I think it was just recognizing, oh, there's something really beautiful here. Is nurturing my daughter that I need to nourish her development in and guide her in how to do that in a healthy way.
So I'm wondering if you have a child, and you said your daughter actually did play sports too. Like, one of my daughters was interested at a very early age in art. She used to color and do really beautiful things, and also just was always dancing. And she later got on a competitive dance team and all of that. But art and dancing, neither of those ended up being a professional interest of hers later. So how does someone discern between something, because there's some element of being drawn to something you enjoy, you find fulfilling or satisfying in some way. How, what do, would you say to someone who's trying to reflect back and sort of see what was sort of the golden thread?
So that golden thread has a lot of what's smaller than a thread, a lot of elements to it. And it's possible that as your daughter was participating in art and dance, that she was learning other capacities that would be important in the expression of her deepest soul purpose. So let me just also clarify. I don't see purpose as a job or a role or a product or a business. My purpose, which you read about, is to speak powerful truths, to shine love onto shadow, to liberate soul's potential, and reunite love and power. Now, that is obviously not a job. And I have made a job, I've made a business out of that, but I've also had many expressions of it that were not what I do now. And over time, as I've matured and continue to gain clarity about who I am and what truly matters to me and what causes me to be deeply aligned with my purpose, I've understood how each of those facets of purpose has shown an expression over time and how I become better and better at that expression. So just as an example, the first part of my purpose is to speak powerful truths. I was doing that as a toddler in a very chaotic, somewhat abusive family. I would stand up to my mother when she would threaten to hit me or say things to me that were, less than nurturing. And I learned to speak up on my own behalf at a really early age and cause her to, stand aghast, like, who is this child? And so I began speaking powerfully very early, just couldn't help it. And it also got me in deep trouble, especially in late adolescence, early adulthood, when I didn't know how to speak powerfully without offending or causing disruption or creating a destructive dynamic. And so at some point I realized, okay, this is this gift I have of speaking powerfully, but I'm not using it well. So I intentionally had to decide, how do I want to do this? Because I can't not do this. I can't not speak up, but how can I speak up in a way that's actually facilitative and constructive? So I studied communication styles and skills and all the things. I eventually became a professional mediator and facilitator. And I'm coach now and have been for decades. And so there's a way that we show up in our purpose, but there's aspects of our life where I'm doing something in order to practice and become better and more capacious at this part of my purpose. So, art and dance are really great facilitators of learning creativity, of learning free expression. And so it's possible that that's how those served. If you don't become an artist or a dancer, it's not like you've wasted time. It's just like you're learning to express yourself. You're learning to use your body. You're learning to expand your imagination. And those are critical capacities that probably served your daughter in some way that are not necessarily related to her golden thread. And I don't know her. Maybe there is some aspect of that that really is aligned with her thread. Does that make
It
sense to you?
does. It does make sense to me. Let me go back though for listeners and try to see if I can zero in on this because it feels important. Take your client who, as a toddler, just gravitated to the dirt, playing in the dirt. And at some point, when she was discouraged from becoming a farmer, it does sound like she was trying to find her way, like a flower shop or, how does, again, how do you, or when would you know that you're really in alignment with your sort of true purpose or yourself?
And that's a really, really great question. And what I would say is that I would answer two things. One is when you are really joyful and you are enthused and you are in flow, and you know every part of you is lit up, you're enlivened by what you're doing. Something about what you're doing, regardless of how close you are actually to the, you know, true manifestation of your purpose, is serving you. Like, so if you know, if you're, say, for this woman, she actually loved having a flower shop. It's just that she couldn't make enough money to support her family. She had young kids, and she decided, you know, I love this, but it's just not making ends meet. I need to try something else. And so she was really searching for an expression that would fulfill all of her humanly needs, not just to be purposeful. And so, you know, living on purpose doesn't mean that you live as a pauper or that you give up a sustainable lifestyle. It means, how can I best fulfill myself doing the things that I love in a way that is literally sustaining all of me, not just, you know, the soul, the heart. And so, unfortunately, because of that early dissuasion by her parents, she literally bought into the belief that she couldn't be a farmer, that she couldn't go into a field that was more aligned with who she was. She knew it at an early age, but she'd been repressed, you know, she had subpsychic parts that we worked on that were critical of her doing the thing that really mattered to her. And so, and secondarily is that almost nothing we ever do in life is a waste. So in this particular instance, she spent, you know, a bulk of her adulthood in university administration, where she gained incredible skills at managing and building systems and organizations, et cetera, that weren't necessarily fulfilling. She enjoyed the job. It was good. It paid her well. It sustained her family. And, you know, she eventually retired fairly well off. And then when she literally said, okay, now I'm going to go live more purposefully, she had all that under her belt that literally helped her attain the next expression of her purpose. So it's not that she was denying herself. It wasn't clear alignment, literally. And she knew it, and she chose to stay in it for those re you know, for the reasons we talked about. Alignment feels like all the parts of me are, you know, it's like all my cylinders are firing. I'm so alive that I can't not do this. You know, so when you reflect on the parts of your life that you always show up and you do this repeatedly, and there's no way you can't not do it. Like me not speaking powerful truths, like I literally can't help myself. I mean, sometimes I'll be in a meeting and I'll just like make my mouth zip close, but it's like I have to put my hands under my legs and just like sit there like, don't talk, Holly. And everybody knows that about me, and they expect it of me. And I've learned over time how to use that well, mostly. But you know, I can't not do it. I also can't not shine love onto shadow. I used to not shine love. I used to shine a flashlight in people's eyes, like, here's the shadow, you know. And it's like throwing a spear at somebody, like, yeah, got you in that place where it. And that wasn't useful. It was also destructive. And I learned over time, like, oh, okay, if I actually shine love onto shadow and help someone see themselves in a way where they can allow that that part of them is repressed and invite it back in and learn to alchemize that part that was lost, and it becomes the power of your essence. So the lost parts of us literally are the missing pieces in our life. And some of us can't find purpose until we reclaim those lost parts, because those were the most powerful parts that were repressed because they were so unique and so different than what was acceptable in our childhood.
Yeah, that's so interesting. It's funny because I kind of want to ask you, and I'm mindful of the time here, want to ask you about synchronicity, because I think you talk about that, and that may be a part of, increased synchronicity when you are more aligned. But in light of the time, so maybe come back to that if there's time at the end, because
Actually, can I give you a little teeny synopsis? So I can't not ask this question, because this has become so apparent to me in the last 5 years of my work. I was guided by God, source, whatever you want to call it, the voices I hear, I was like, you need to figure out synchronicity. I'm like, what? I'm just a human. But I did. So when we are so aligned that our quarks are all moving, quarks, cells, molecules, atoms, quarks, when our quarks are all moving in the right same direction, and we are that aligned, like it's this is the GPS, every part of me is moving in the right direction, it creates an internal coherence. And then when that happens, I create an external coherence. So I start resonating with the people and opportunities in my life and my surroundings. And then I resonate even more. And then I eventually create superposition. I can live in more than one place at a time. This is quantum physics. This is not woo. And then when that happens and I've expanded this resonance, I literally create synchronicity. So I have learned how to create magic. It is possible. This is not some mystical, magical, thing. This is like we are learning that science and spirituality are actually the same thing. We've just been calling it all different. And so when I am aligned, literally, I can move on that trajectory to synchronicity.
And I think that's so interesting. It's one of the things that I think once you experience it, you kind of get it. It's like the experience of awe when you get to the top of a mountain, or you're just in one of those breathtaking moments and you go, wow. And it really hits you that this is a big universe, and me and my problems aren't that big a deal. Like, and you just started realize you're just a part of something that's much, much larger. There's that, but synchronicity is like that too. And the more I'm doing things that I'm energized and excited about, like you say, it's that sort of light me up, the more all of a sudden opportunities seem to show up.
Absolutely. I mean, literally, the universe, I like to say the universe has our back. And that's, what you basically call faith or trust, that life happens exactly as it's supposed to if you are living in alignment with your truth. It all shows up, everything. Sometimes it doesn't feel good. Sometimes it's a knock on the head, like, wake up, Ollie. You're doing that thing again that keeps you from being yourself, or expressing something in a way that's not necessarily productive. But yeah, it all shows up perfectly.
So for someone that doesn't feel like opportunities are flowing their direction, or they feel like everybody else is having good luck and I'm not, whatever, for that person, that might be an indication that they aren't aligned, that they're living a life maybe dedicated to something other than their life's,
Their deepest self, their true
their true
self.
self, their
They're
true
not living
self.
as their
And
true
there might be
self.
good reason for that. Like you said, they might have financial responsibilities or whatnot. So that makes sense. If someone's feeling that way, this was the question I was going to ask. What are a few things someone could do? Obviously, reading your book is a good start. It really is a good start because you really go deep into the shadow work, and you really just, I mean, there's a lot of information there. That's one thing. But I imagine it can feel, I think it has for myself when I was much younger, kind of daunting. And so I wonder if you have just some words of guidance for people that feel like, I really want to try to figure this out.
And I just to comment, I've never ever worked with someone who, no matter how desperate or how desperate they felt about their life, financially or otherwise, relationally, is those are kind of the two biggies, or career-wise. I've never worked with someone who we couldn't very quickly discern what mattered most to them, what mattered more than what they were doing, and help them become aligned even just a little bit, which actually started to shift everything. And part of doing that is also, so I'll give you some specific practices, but part of it is also your willingness to go into the hard parts, the trauma, the terror of our lives, really, and examine what are the commonalities there? What are the patterns of you showing up less than who you really are? that contribute to those traumas. And I'm not suggesting that we should take on responsibility for trauma that happens in our life, as much as realizing that when I am living with a version of me that is less than, I'm holding some beliefs in me about myself and my life and what I'm worthy of that call in, that resonate with the trauma that happened. I didn't cause it. I'm not responsible for it. I don't want it to happen again. And that other person is responsible for the act or incident. But there's a part of me that resonated with what happened. And when I can uncover that, I can begin to clear it. And life will begin to shift very drastically, very fast. And so, you know, two things. One of them is actually doing that, taking the time to think about what are the patterns of traumatic events or pain or suffering that we've imagined are just a natural part of life. I don't believe we have to suffer. I think we choose to suffer. Life just happens and we choose it. And if I'm not examining my responsibility for it creating, inciting that because of some energy I'm holding, then I'm just going to keep experiencing it. So what are the patterns? How am I showing up in a way that perpetuates that pattern? You know, what are the beliefs that I tell myself? What do I think about myself? Am I good enough or worthy enough? And there's a whole lot of belief work that I do. But that's a very first step. Examine what beliefs you're telling about yourself that would help you uncover why you may not be receiving something else in life, why the universe is bringing you those things. The second is, I mean, literally at any, you can spend, you know, you can spend a couple of days, and this is a practice I do, is create a timeline and go back maybe each decade of your life and think about what were the curiosities, what were the things that you were obsessed about, the books you read, the movies you watched, the things you couldn't help but ask your parents or friends about, and you wanted as much information and opportunity in those things as you could. You know, in every aspect of your life, what is it that really intrigued you and drove you to learn something new? And over time, you're going to see some patterns about those things. You know, kind of like your example of your daughter, art and dance. It may not be that it was, you know, a part, it wasn't necessarily a part of her purpose to do art or dance, but there's something about those experiences, maybe how she was in it, maybe the result of that, of doing art or dance, or some part of her, the social sphere that she was in related to art and dance. And so you have to have an open mind to explore what is the connection, what's the glue about all these things in your life. And lastly, I think, you know, for most of us, if you're not wanting to do really, really, really deep work, which is kind of what I do, is to do really deep work, is just to find things in life that enliven you. Like, what makes me feel better about this moment? What makes me have more joy and vivaciousness in a day? You know, what can I do that causes me to be more alive? Maybe it's taking a walk in nature. Maybe it's getting together with your friends. You know, maybe it's doing art. Maybe it's listening to music that puts you in flow. And flow is an indicator of being aligned. It's not, you know, it's not an end result in itself. Like, the goal of life is not to be in flow. The goal in life is to feel flow, to feel joy, to feel enlivenment as you're really living your life, because that is some indication of living, you know, living purposefully, living with intention, living with greater meaning.
Yeah, I think that one of the things reading the book that really seemed clearer to me is that when you're living more connected with your true purpose, you're just enjoying day-to-day life versus living with this idea that I'm working really hard every day, and I'm going to be
Right.
happy when I get to a goal that,
Yeah. Or when I
yeah,
retire.
waiting for
Yeah.
this. So the joy is always postponed. And then, of course, as we all know, we get to the goal and we're happy for about a day. And then,
Yeah. And most retired people die. Because, okay, so why would I postpone joy? Why would I postpone
So
aliveness?
sort of that whole idea of
And
like, yeah, you're trying to find a way to, how could we enjoy the journey, the day-to-day of life?
yeah.
And you're really clarifying, well, get more aligned.
Yeah. And you said something a minute ago that when people have financial obligations, that maybe that isn't the best time to find purpose. And I would say, nah, that's actually not true, because I mean, you can see me when you're as alive as I am with what I do and what matters to me. Like, how is it possible that I am also not going to be abundant, that I'm not going to be inviting people into this world, and which means that I'm better off financially and otherwise than I've ever been in my life. The more alive, the more aligned, the more expressive I am about what I do, the better the rest of my life goes. So it's not that, oh, I gave up something to live this way. It's like, no, actually, this brought things to me. So the people and the circumstances, like everybody wants, I want more of your purpose. Like, when you are so alive in your purpose, I can't help but not want that, because you are excited and enthused and committed, and you show up with joy. Like, how could I not want that? So all of us have that opportunity, and mine just happens, my purpose just happens to be helping people find their purpose. But we all have our very, very unique, one of a kind expression of our soul, and everybody's is different. So there's no such thing as competition. We're not in competition with each other as humans. That's just the stupidest idea. And because each of us is literally it's one in 480 quadrillion risk of being here as yourself. So I don't know. I think it's funny that we as humans have created this notion that, oh, I have to work to pay for my life and all the things until I can retire, and then I can become myself. It's like, you just wasted a whole life. Like, why did you, not to make people feel bad, because this is a fairly new notion, but it's never too late. Like, start tomorrow, start today, going and doing things that really bring you alive, and just little by little, find your way.
No, it's so interesting because, I was 43 when I went back and started a doctoral program. And, I remember
Right.
people saying, well, what are you doing that for? And I was like, well, I want to go back to school because I'd like to be a therapist. And people saying, well, you could just do a master's program or, and I was like, no, I really want to take all those courses. I really want to do the deep dive into the subject.
Good. Yay.
So, and it was all about, I wanted that experience in school. I wasn't ch chasing the
Exactly.
degree. And that was probably the
Yeah.
first time in
Yes.
my life where I felt like I was
That's
guided more
beautiful.
by the experience I was going to have than the end goal, which is so interesting.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I'm not a young chicken. I've been doing my work for 40, I mean, I've been doing my personal work 45 years, and I've been a professional doing this work for 40 years. And I am always learning new things. Like, oh, there's something else that would actually make my work better, more powerful. I'm studying with two shamans about psychedelic therapies, and I'm, taking more courses on flow, and I'm actually about to launch a new product. Like, who does that in their 60s? And so I'm launching a group cohort for do you know I've been doing one-on-one work forever, and I'm about to launch a group cohort, and I know that's going to be a fairly significant investment of my life to do that. But it's like, I can't not do it. Like, I just can't.
Nice. I'm glad you went there because that was actually my closing question for you, is I wanted to give you an opportunity to just share anything or mention to listeners anything that you want to bring to their attention about what you're
Well,
doing now.
sweet. Well, thank you. Certainly, I'd love, people to read the book, and it is a foundation of my work, and my work has expanded since then, 4 years ago, just because I'm an evolutionary and I'm constantly expanding and evolving. So the work I'm about to launch this spring summer is called Your Sacred Human Expedition, and it is literally guiding people through this process in a group cohort community. Which we sorely need right now for all of us to become really engaged in our lives. The sacred version of us, the version of us that really is here to do the universal work, the world work. And so I'm excited about that. I don't yet have a website. It will be at sacredhumanexpedition.com, and right now it's just a blank page, but I'm working on that, and that'll be fun. Launch probably June-ish, it's my guess. And another book will probably be coming out shortly. I'm constantly writing and developing new things.
A
So,
lot going on.
and you can find me at emergenceinstitute.net, for now.
Okay, that's important. So for now, they can find you there, and that would be a way to follow you for any future happenings.
Yeah,
Oh,
yes.
well,
Thank you so
thank you
much.
for your time today and for sharing so much with us, and really bringing people along on this whole idea of appreciating the need to have that connection to your purpose.
Yeah, it's a pretty foundational element of being human. I'm not sure how we got so lost, all the, these centuries, but I'm really excited to help us get back to ourselves. Yeah.